The following is a replay of a live show that aired Wednesday, April 24th at 5 o'clock p.m. The opinions expressed do not reflect the opinions of the University of Wisconsin-Madison or its Board of Regents. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy!
Hello, you're listening to After Further Review on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison Student Radio, hosted by myself, Alex Schuster, and the man, the myth, the legend, Vincent Hesprick.
Oh, thank you so very much, Alex. I'm definitely going to miss that. We have, what, including this one, three shows left?
I believe so. Maybe some summer editions. Maybe we can sneak into the studio a little bit.
Hopefully I don't think we have to sneak. I think they'll let us in. I mean, with Hop and you're here, they probably think you're sneaking in. Like, who's this guy?
I mean, they show up and everyone's giving me a pat down. They got to ask for my WIS card.
DSA.
Show it twice. Empty my backpack.
Oh.
All right. Jumping into the show, we have Rate My Take. And I normally do a wheel spinner. This time, I already know what your take's going to be about. I think it's much better than mine. So I'm going to speed through mine. And then I'm excited to talk about your topic as well. So,
yeah, me too. I'm not excited to hear yours.
I assume you're not, because guess what? It's about Formula One yet again.
Oh, I love the F1 talk. Get out of here.
All right. So recently, the lead into this is earlier this season, we had an 18-year-old get into the car, a Ferrari car nonetheless, and race this year. Oliver Bearman got a chance, finished, I want to say P7 in his first debut race. Very impressive performance, 18 years old, currently sitting at last place in F2, but a very promising young driver. Also, another very promising young driver is Kimi Antonelli. And I believe that he will find a way into an F1 seat by the end of the year. And so my prediction, not that he's going to end up finishing a season or even driving a race, really, but he's going to have a chance to find his way into an F1 car as a trial to see if he has what it takes to make it into Formula One the following season. He's 17 years old right now, which I think is mind-blowing. It does make it a bold prediction. I mean, he will have to turn 18 before I think he's even allowed to step into a race car. as powerful as a Formula One car, I mean, the fastest on Earth, most expensive race cars on Earth. I think the Mercedes, they have an opening, Lewis Hamilton moving to Ferrari next season. They already have their golden boy right now, George Russell, who is a British driver racing for a British team, so they'd love to have him there. But then they're also looking for who's next. And they had that opportunity a long time ago with Max Verstappen when he was 17. They had an opening, same situation. They chose not to go with him. And
whoops.
Yeah, a huge mistake, but at the same time, it didn't really matter because they're still winning world championships, absolutely dominating along the way. But thinking about what could have been pairing him with that Mercedes car of the previous regulations in Formula One. A few years from now, there will be the exact same scenario, a regulation change, not next season, but the year after. And I believe Kimi Antonelli is going to be their choice for it, which should be a surprising choice. It would be a very bold choice, but I think they're looking to not make the same mistakes they did by passing up on ideally the next Max Verstappen, of a young, promising racing driver. You don't need to give him the chance in the Williams or some slow car to warm him up and get him used to all the tracks and the speed and everything that it takes to drive in Formula One, and just give him the shot right off the jump.
Yeah, well, I think it's very interesting. You talk about the phenoms, I mean, just across sports as a whole, but especially in F1, where it's like, it's just so weird seeing that we're at the age now where the athletes that we watch are younger than us, which just kind of, it tricks me a little bit because I feel larger than life, but that just kind of lets us reflect on just how impressive it is that what they're doing. I mean, as I mentioned before, I have trouble making it to class on time. Jackson Chourio is hitting bombs in Major League Baseball. But yeah, I'm sure it's tough because you talk about how young players are. They're also very raw as well. So you talk about like Max Verstappen. It's obviously, it feels like it's a slam dunk in retrospect, but it's just a 17-year-old. You got no idea what they're going to be like, both as a driver and as a person down the road. So your prediction is that they should jump on this?
It's not that they should. I think that during the course of a Formula One season, there, I believe, is 24 races, the most races ever in a season. And they're, depending on the weekend, if it's a sprint race or a normal race, there's at least 4 to 5 opportunities on track for like pre-testing, free practice is what they call it, qualifying or the actual race itself. I don't think that they would let them get in for qualifying or the race itself, but at least one free practice opportunity after he turns 18 years old at the end of the season. This also leads into my previous Formula One take that Max Verstappen is going to dominate all season long. And if that is the case, I think then you might as well experiment. And at that point, you see what the future holds with these guys. It doesn't mean that he'll get the seat the following year. I think that would be a poor choice. I think he does. You should make him go through the lower teams first before you get that top competitive seat. But it wouldn't surprise me, at least for a free practice session. I mean, we've seen it before with reserve drivers getting an opportunity, and normally it takes some sort of illness or an injury or something like that to an actual driver to get in there. But with Lewis Hamilton on his way out, I mean, he looks like he's already quit just 3 races into the season. And I wouldn't be surprised if they quit on him as well and say, you know what, like, you have fun at Mercedes, we're going to give this guy an opportunity, take away one of your practice sessions, like, you're not doing anything for us on the track, we're not going to do anything for you either.
Yeah, I feel like this is just a flat-out I agree. I mean, I don't know a ton about F1, obviously, but I know that Lewis Hamilton has definitely mentally quit on his team, you could say, almost like you say it's similar to like James Harden, his last couple games with the Rockets, where he's just like not there.
And he just hates the car he's driving in, and he has no problem making that clear. But also, I think the team hates that he's driving their car right now. They don't want to give him any of the secrets to take with him to his next team. They don't want to give him anything anymore. Like, he was with the team for the majority of his career, not his entire time. He raced at McLaren for a while, switched into Mercedes, and some, especially Mercedes fans now, would say that he got lucky as a 7-time world champion, which is a funny thing to say, that he was in the right place at the right time. Even his former teammate that was battling him for his first few championships, helping him win the Constructors' Championship for the team the earlier years, Nico Rosberg, even had a little mental slip of just revealing the truth through a little stumbling on air, and he was saying that he just was in the right place at the right time with Mercedes, and that's what he's hoping to get right again, choosing to change from Mercedes to Ferrari with new rule changes again.
Yeah, it feels like almost like, because you can say Tom Brady's the GOAT, because he is. You can also admit that he got very lucky with the situation being in such a bad division. So it feels like a similar set of circumstances there. And plus, I don't mind people filling in for somebody who's mentally checked out. I mean, in Wisconsin example, Barry Alvarez has kicked Brett Bielema to the curb before and coached some what was it? It was a bowl game, I know. I forget who they play. But, I'm all for someone's giving him a chance.
The same on the way out.
There you go. Yeah, jumped in for one. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'll give you I have an elementary understanding, but it just feels like that you're right. I'll give you the 9 on this one.
I see. I think that's way too high because you got to remember, he's 17 years old. Like, this is a trial.
You got nothing to lose, though, right?
If he was a normal kid, he would be in high school right now. But instead, he's driving some of the fastest cars in the world, traveling the world. A little bit of a break right now in his actual season. But I think by the end of the year, he does, in F2, prove that he deserves the opportunity and then gets it, which is a big ask. Right now he's in 9th place in F2. They have 11 races, only 3 races into the year. But I think, rating my own take, I think even a 7 would be, I'd be very happy with that. I think this is like a 4 to 7 range.
Oh, fine. I'll give you a 4 then.
Okay. You go to the low end.
Yeah.
Go to the
low end. No, you don't tell me what to grade you. I decide. That's fine. I'll give you a 1, actually. How do you like that?
All right. I'll take it.
No, it feels like a reasonable opinion. I want to make sure it's on the record. I don't want you to beat me up after the show ends.
Well, and Knowing me, I just started the show with the least interesting topic for anyone else, rambled for way longer than I planned to, and now we have to jump to the most pressing story of the week.
Now, you say impressing, I'd say depressing might also be one, but definitely could be a lot worse. Bucks lost game two last night, and although I don't think the officiating was great, the Bucks deserved to lose because they were legitimately terrible, particularly on the defensive end. In game one, the Pacers shot 8 of 39 from deep despite getting a ton of open looks. No such luck for the Bucks last night. Pacers shot 56% from the field, 16 of 36 from deep, took down the Bucks 125 to 108. Obviously, as I mentioned plenty of times on the show, it's basically one of my many silly catchphrases. The internet doesn't speak for everyone, right? Just because something's a consensus online doesn't mean it's a consensus, period. But I've seen a decent amount of Bucks are cooked talk. And Alex, pains me to say it, but the It's Over conglomerate has some good points. The Pacers match up really well against the current Bucks team for a variety of X's and O's reasons, but the biggest cause for the mismatch is pretty simple. Pascal Siakam. He had 36 points. And first of all, I want to say that it's pretty crazy he's having such an awesome series, because I picked the Bucks to win partially because I didn't trust Pascal Siakam in the playoffs. He has been prolific. 36 points on 25 shots in a fantastic game one. Somehow even better in game two last night. 37 points on 23 shots, including 3 of 4 from deep. And on his 2 blocks in game one, 6 assists in game two. So it's easy to see why Siakam has been unstoppable in this series. And I really think that unstoppable is not an exaggeration. I think it's a fact. Because Brook Lopez went 6 of 7 from deep yesterday, but he was downright terrible on the defensive end. Because Brook Lopez, he's a nice rim protector, great shot blocker, fantastic help side defender. But I think most of that's under the stipulation that he's in the paint. Because when you get him outside the paint, that's when he struggles a little bit. So Pascal Siakam was feasting on the drop coverage last night and throughout the entire series. Jump shots galore, and whenever Brook would come up to try and contest that jump shot at the outside the block or at the elbow, suddenly Siakam would fly right by him to the rim for the easy lay-in. And you try Bobby Portis, not much better. He's got some more lateral movement, but he's just not as strong down low. Siakam has the footwork and the strength to take him to the cup, and you can't really try anyone else on him, honestly. Chris Middleton is a thin 6'7", might even be closer to a point guard than he is a power forward, although that's what he was playing at times for the Bucks yesterday. Jay Crowder looks like he would have been great in 2020, but unfortunately in his current iteration, it feels like he's lost multiple steps. And even if you do try and double him, Indiana just has so many great shooters. They know how to space the floor, pick up the pace. There's just really not much you can do from the Bucks. There's no real solution here that I can think of, so the anti-Bucks crowd seems to have it. 2 games in, this series is over. Unless, hypothetically, the Bucks could acquire a player, not sure it'd be like free agency or like black market trade, but if they could just get a big, strong 7-footer who's a great rim protector with elite lateral movement, a ton of talent in transition, and the ability to distribute the ball on offense, I think they'd be set up pretty well here. I mean, can you think of anyone the Bucks could happen to acquire in this series, Alex?
I mean, not just a 7-footer. I believe he's 7'2", arguably 7'3".
Well, the wingspan, I yeah. know. Yeah, yeah. The Bucks are cooked talk would be a whole lot more reasonable if the Bucks were not without the single most versatile defender in the league and inarguably a top three player in the league in Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Nonetheless, defender as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say.
Oh, yeah, I'd say 100%.
Another point, sorry to cut you off.
Go for it.
The Brook Lopez discussion. I know everyone loves to talk about him as a great defensive player. When did he become a great defensive player? When he joined the Bucks and was playing alongside Giannis
on the
court.
Yeah.
I think that makes a huge impact. He's a huge paint defender, paint presence, good rim protector. But at the same time, that's playing off another phenomenal rim protector and someone who can sometimes guard the outside. Not perfectly, but I would say that Giannis can get... His reins spreads closer to the perimeter and then takes that slack off of Brook Lopez, who is not good outside the paint.
Yeah, you can have a slow lumbering giant on defense. I'd say that Brook Lopez, he's kind of Rudy Gobert Kirkland brand in a way, but the Timberwolves have the best defense in the league by a mile. So there's definitely, you can get away with that. It's just that when Brook is...
The pieces
around him matters. Yeah, he needs to be in the paint, and the Pacers are such a great jump shot team. And even on offense, the Bucks look just kind of, I don't want to say lost, but they did not do well in the paint. They kind of relied on the three-pointer quite a bit. Couldn't really slash as well as they wanted to because Brook was, you know, on the perimeter for the most part. Well, he was great from deep. I don't usually subscribe to the I hate having big men outside, but you need to have someone in the paint sometimes, and we just did not get a lot of that last night.
And think about how many times this assortment of guys, without Giannis specifically, has had to take the court over the course of the season. This is the first time the Bucks have had Dame. Most of the guys without Dame have played together. They haven't played with Dame. They don't know, like, they haven't had the entire course of the season. Like,
there's chemistry that needs to be built, you're saying.
Yes, and this, in my mind, it's not game one of the year. They did play, Giannis missed games, obviously, and they have time with him off the court. But at the same time, this is like month two, month three of a normal season without like a player. And the fact that they won game one the way they won it, starting off very hot, I think that's what they would have had to do in game two. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And Pacers stole that game at home. And Tyrese Halliburton's saying stuff about the Bucks home playoff atmosphere.
I love it because I love the intrigue.
Yeah. We're missing our star player. I mean, as a Bucks fan myself, I mean, my first thought of this is like winning game one, I think that might have been one of the first times that obviously it's happened before, we've won a game without Giannis in the playoffs. But the games that I've watched without Giannis in the playoffs that we've actually won, there's not that many that I can count. It's a handful of games. So seeing that and being at the home atmosphere without your star player, it's a huge dynamic shift. You're used to having the explosive plays on offense and on defense that Giannis brings to the court that elevates that home atmosphere.
Yeah, and it's funny because Bobby Portis said after the game, he just straight up called the Pacers, exact word was front runners. Now, within the context of it, he was just saying like, yeah, well, when you win a game, you feel good afterwards. But I think he went out of his way to kind of throw a shot at the Pacers. And he's kind of, I don't want to say getting killed for it, but there's a lot of people like, okay, buddy, you just lost a game. But I feel almost compare it to when Luka was playing the Suns, and he said everybody tough when they up, and I was like, oh, that's a hard line right there. And then all of a sudden he came back and won it. So I think that this is a Bucks team that'll be fired up. That being said, the thing that concerns me right now is that we don't know exactly when Giannis will be back, because according to Shams Charania, I think his last name is, he reported that Giannis, he's not sprinting yet in practice, he's not cutting, he's not scrimmaging, and although he is taking jump shots. It makes you a little concerned because if he misses game three and four, there's definitely a chance that the Pacers take a 3-1 lead.
And so if we recall last week, I made the prediction that the Pacers would win this series specifically because of that. And it changes everything for the season. Like the fact that like watching these games doesn't feel the same, not having Giannis out there, where my expectations are honestly for us to lose these games. Like it is a very different team without Giannis on the court. Like I don't think Dame would agree to a trade to Milwaukee if Giannis wasn't there. There's absolutely no
way. Oh yeah,
way.
We wouldn't even trade for him because we wouldn't be good enough to compete.
Yeah. And so like seeing this playoff series without Giannis out there, I hate to say it, but it almost makes it into a wash, like unless he can get back all the way healthy. And like
I don't even know if all the way healthy.
But even last year with that Heat series, it was a similar situation where, like, the injuries, I think that changed that series tremendously, and, like, it would have changed that the entire outcome of last year's playoffs if Giannis didn't get hurt. But then that also makes me sound like a Philly fan with Joel Embiid and just making excuses left and right.
Yeah, I think Embiid has much more of a checkered history. I feel like we kind of say that Giannis's injury history is kind of due to unluckiness, while Joel is saying he's just straight up injury prone. But yeah, there definitely is some.
A guy falls on his leg. It's not him diving to the floor.
Yeah. Nope. There you go. But yeah, there is starting to have the conversation of is Giannis injury prone? What will his longevity look like? But as of right now, just need him back to guard Pascal Siakam. And so I'm not saying the Bucks are going to win. I picked them to win this series. I don't have them to win the championship, but I picked them to win this series. But to say it's over after we split a game, I would take that.
And the other part of the argument that I don't know if you touched on was the Pacers' home court advantage. Over the course of the season, they've been a very different team at home versus on the road. And losing a game at home, I mean, obviously not something you'd want. Milwaukee, in my opinion, I do think we have a great home court advantage when our entire team is there together and rolling. Like Deer District, everything going together is pretty fantastic inside the arena and just through the entire streets of Milwaukee. Even the entire state of Milwaukee, everyone wears
a
merchandise
big deal when
walking,
they won it.
Yeah, walking around like everyone's proud to wear that. After you win a couple games, I think you got to start building towards that again, and especially just needing Giannis back.
Sounds good. So throw a number at me here, Alex.
I mean, this is a 10. We 100%.
Yeah, we're just taking layup after layup.
I get so mad looking at like people talking about like, oh, what's going to happen if the Bucks lose? And it's like, it's not the same team. Like, the losing your best player right before the playoffs.
Devastating.
Yeah, it changes your expectations completely. So the narrative should not be the same as what everyone had typed up on their computer leading into the season. Like, the two folders, Bucks win, Bucks lose. Like, you got to – sorry.
I like that analogy.
You got to write a new article.
I like that. Two quick points here. First of all, the same injury that Giannis had, it was the one that Luka suffered 2 years ago. I'd say he looked pretty good when he came back from injury, absolutely cooked the Suns, closed out the Jazz. So you could talk about Giannis's physical play style. But I think that I'm not super concerned about what he'll look like when he gets back. Just a matter, because even in a limited capacity, he would be just huge for this defense. And on the other side, even if we did have Giannis and we lost a game, I still wouldn't be like panicking, because this is a Bucks team that, even when they win series, they still, you know, lose a lot of home games. I remember when we won the championship, we lost a game. We went down 0-2 against
the Suns
Brooklyn.
Series.
Yeah, so down 0-2. Even at home, though, we lost a game to the Suns, lost a game to the Magic in the bubble. It's the team that they lose a lot. Even the Raptors, the Celtics in 2018, when Kyrie took game one, it was like, oh, yeah, we knew it. It's over. And then we swept them the rest of the way. If they lose game three, which I think they will, I'll be real nervous. If they can just split against Indiana, I think we'll still be in a decent spot here.
And I could be wrong about this, but we split games one and two in the finals, and then Giannis came back, and didn't we lose that game as well, game three?
Of the finals?
No,
we lost game one and two, and then we won the rest of the way.
Okay, so it was the other way around. Yeah. Did he come back game two then?
He played in game one, dude.
Oh, how?
Played 29 minutes,
yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, with that, we'll jump to, what are we calling it?
Badger Sports Day?
I don't know. We'll come up with a better name by the end of the year. We'll do it next week. But I want a quick touch on women's basketball. Really big signing for them. They've been on the wrong side of the transfer portal quite a bit the last 2 years, but they got a big signing to make up for it. Carter McRae headed to Wisconsin basketball. Coming in, she played in the Horizon League at Northern Kentucky, averaged 17 points per game and 11 rebounds. I guess I had it wrong in my initial notes because it said 15 at first, but I'm looking at the website. So 17 and 11 in the Horizon League. It was a freshman last year, now just a sophomore. Pairing her with Sarah Williams, going to be absolutely fantastic. And as I've mentioned probably an annoying amount of times on this show, I had the opportunity not too long ago to sit down with Wisconsin women's basketball head coach Marissa Mosley. In light of Mosley's terrific acquisition of Carter McRae, I figured this would be a great time to revisit a segment of that conversation, which to me outlines what makes this admittedly imperfect team just so much fun to follow.
For me, I'm just being who I am every day, and I feel like that's an important part of my team's success is feeding off of the energy, the attitude, the approach, the philosophy of how I want us to go about competing.
Now, it's funny you talk about your attitude because it seems like you're a bit of a prankster during practices. Here's a quote from Avery LaBarbera. She said about you, she's very serious, but she'll crack jokes on the sideline. If someone airballs, she'll be the first one to say, hey, Avery, the ball is supposed to go in the basket. What are some of your favorite playful jabs you've lobbed at players over the years?
Oh, gosh. I've said there's no NIL for the amount of dribbles that you take. told them that we don't have insurance for the backboard if they brick a shot. I think, you know, for me, when you've developed a great relationship and rapport with your players, I feel like that allows me to have those playful moments with them and to also kind of give a little levity to situations where it might feel like the tension is high, and for them to understand, like, at the end of the day, we're still playing a game and you gotta not be able to take yourself too seriously. Like, I am a competitor and I'm serious. If anyone watches me on the sideline during a game, like, I am locked in. But there's also going to be moments where I'm cracking a smile or cracking a joke, especially in the huddle when I can feel that that's rising for the kids to just kind of bring down any type of stress that they're having, or maybe even I'm having, you know. And again, I said the energy is contagious. So if I'm stressed, they're going to feel that too.
So your games, obviously, you can't replicate the game environment totally when you're in practice. I mean, you can't really replicate the nerves that come with a late-game situation. But how do you try to put your team in positions where they're comfortable in late-game spots?
Yeah, we just do a lot of different end-of-game situations, and I'll usually try to do it at the end of practice when they're fatigued, mentally, physically fatigued, maybe emotionally fatigued, you know, and then we give them a scenario. You know, we're down one with, you know, 5 seconds to go, or we're up two and we need to get a stop, or it's a tie game, and, you know, we have to go the full length of the court and they've got to execute and get a shot off and not just anything, but we're really, you know, trying to get it. I'll draw something up that they've not seen before, because potentially we might be in a situation where, you know, if we've got three late game things and maybe we've only had our package had two that we really were good at, like, I'm going to draw something that maybe the other team isn't accustomed to seeing, so they're not ready to guard it, but my team has to be able to execute. So it's kind of continuously putting them in those positions in practice that, yes, you're absolutely right. You can't mimic that late game nerves, but at the same time, the clock has an incredible way of really heightening everybody's anxiety. And just, you know, as you see those numbers ticking down, no matter if, you know, it's like kids in the backyard, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know, and then they're like, ah, you know, for the win. Everybody has that mindset when you're an athlete to, like, be able to put yourself in that venue, in that arena, in that moment mentally, to try to make sure you execute.
If a player cashes a buzzer beater in practice, does the team go crazy and do some 100%. Celebrating?
Okay. 100%. Like, they, like, especially if it's like the end of practice. But even, like, you know, one of the things for me that I think this group in particular has gotten really good at is I constantly am harping on getting excited for other people's success more than your own. I think that that's a huge kind of component of not only the way that I live my life, but I want my team to be able to conduct themselves, because there's so much reward in getting excited for what other people are doing than just worrying about yourself all the time. And so, like, for to see them get hyped up for their teammates, or, you know, somebody who doesn't normally score in that way or whatever, and, like, really, like, show that emotion or jump on them, or, you know, like, push them, be like, yeah, you know, and I'm right there. And I'll talk junk to the practice players, like, if our kids get a big stop or block a shot or something, because to me, our male practice players are a huge part of, you know, an integral part of our success too. But they can get it. Like, anybody in the gym can get it from Coach Mo in, like, a way that is playful, and I'll jab them. But if you dish it out, you got to be able to take it. So yeah, they come back at me and I'm like, touche, that was a good one. And we all get a good laugh and then we get back to work.
And we're back live in the studio. My thanks again to Coach Mo for visiting WSUM in person to speak with us. Drove all the way here. It was an awesome treat. And with that, we will take it to break. Don't go anywhere, though. We're going to talk some NBA playoffs and NFL draft coming up. We're going to do something really creative. Just kidding. We're going to do a mock draft instead.
Hey, Jay, what are you doing?
I'm going to walk.
But, Jay, the light is red. What if there's a car?
You know I don't believe in cars. I'm going to walk.
Jay, please.
I'm doing it.
He really put the L in walk.
Let's not be like our ex-friend Jay. It's well known that Wisconsin ranks 46th in the country for jaywalking-related accidents. And with your participation, we could be 47th.
Here are some tips to help you obey pedestrian traffic laws. Often find yourself restless at a red light? Carry around a fidget toy or a snack. Look left and right, then left again. Repeat as necessary. Hold hands while crossing the street. If still inclined to break the law, ask a friend to restrain you.
Remember, you can't walk if you're hit by a car.
If you've ever watched a Wisconsin volleyball game before, you're probably all too familiar with this famous PA announcement. That voice announcing Point Wisconsin may sound faint when the fieldhouse reaches its famous fever pitch, but the story behind that voice is worthy of its own round of applause.
I first sat down and I would say Point Wisconsin, and I'd have people coming up to me saying, "You're saying it wrong."
That's Bonnie Olson, who's been the PA voice of Wisconsin volleyball since 1996. Although Olson has manufactured a fantastic career as a PA announcer over the last 26 years, first gig came entirely by chance that she was working at a local radio station out of college.
I got a phone call when I was on the request line, and they said, hey, Bonnie, we have this pro AA volleyball team coming to town. Would you be interested in announcing for it? And I'm like, sure, that sounds like fun.
The Wisconsin volleyball officials at that game took note of Olsen's friendly yet distinct voice and offered her the position as the team's official stadium announcer. Since then, Bonnie has never looked back as her role has expanded to include stops with every single women's sports team at Wisconsin, as well as the Milwaukee Bucks and even the entirety of the 2024 Big Ten Women's Basketball Tournament. Although Olsen has spent decades perfecting her craft, she credits her success to a bit of luck and the ability to simply say yes.
My whole career has just been saying, yeah, I'll try that, because I'm not scared to mess up in front of a ton of people. So, well, you know, sure, I'll try basketball. Sure, I'll try softball. Sure, I'll try this.
Olsen says her favorite part of the job is just being around the players and teams she already loves so much.
I love the volleyball team, love basketball, softball. I love those teams. It's awesome. I love the Bucks. I haven't been to too many games before, but how could you not be a fan with Giannis and everybody in there? It's been pretty great.
So the next time you're at a women's sporting event at Madison and the stadium starts going wild, take a second to appreciate that sometimes faint, but always friendly, energetic, and passionate stadium announcer.
What do you like to say, Vince? Wise words from a wise person there.
Yeah, that definitely applies to Miss Olsen as well. She was fantastic. But I got to give a thank you to you as well, Alex. Let me play those on the air. Not only do I think they're entertaining, they also playing on the air makes them eligible for awards. Wink, wink. So I had to maybe shoehorn that in there, but I appreciate you nonetheless for letting me, or like WSUM, use our show for its own pursuits.
Well, I think it was worth the time there. Definitely.
Small talking the whole time. Get out of here.
Well, I made sure to keep an ear open.
I appreciate that.
The audio story especially was a 10 out of 10 right there.
Wow,
no wonder you got 100% on that.
Oh, you're too kind.
Jumping back into our regularly scheduled programming here, we have NBA playoff talks. Do you want to start off with Stars under the most pressure here right away? I mean, we kind of already talked about the Bucks here. So obviously, NBA is known for its superpower, the top all-stars always under contention, who's going to get the votes, and then also the household names kind of playing a big factor in there. So from the media, from the fans themselves at home, who do you think are the most under pressure in this postseason?
Well, I think that I don't want to say it was a clear number one, but I think that did you rank people or?
And so I made a list. I kind of have my I have seven names. Some of them are supporting cast thrown together.
Gotcha.
But I have a clear four that I think if they don't win a championship or at least make the finals this year, they will definitely be on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, the clear number one, I almost feel like it has to be Jason Tatum to an extent, because he's been really trying to work himself into that pure superstar conversation. It feels like he's kind of been that lower echelon. This is a team that, if they have a true superstar, they're going to win the finals. If Jason Tatum plays like we know he can, the Celtics could easily clear through the playoffs as a whole. I mean, a guy who's given you great numbers, but just hasn't quite had that playoff success. One trip to the finals, and although he is very young, it's been kind of off and on in terms of the Celtics' postseason lack of success. So you can make kind of excuse on some of them. I mean, the Kyrie saga, they've dealt with some injuries as well, but when you have a team this good, that's this healthy, they're so easily the most talented team in the NBA. It's just going to be up to him to get the job done.
I threw Jaylen Brown in there as a duo, as the highest paid player in the NBA. You got to be under pressure there. You earn your contract.
I forgot about that part.
I mean, Tatum obviously is the number one, so I feel like on the court you expect the results from him. But Jaylen Brown equally has to live up in these playoffs. I do think the Celtics are under the most pressure. The narrative, at least, that I would like to throw out there of like LeBron in the East for all those years with the Cavs, the Heat, the Cavs again, a very weak Eastern Conference, should be easy. I mean, the expectation is to win the finals for him, but at bare minimum, for a team that was as dominant within their conference as the Celtics, you have to at least make the finals. Nevertheless, win it when you have a superstar like Jason Tatum, or supposed superstar. I think he has to win the championship to be thrown into that next level. I think not having the championship has kind of ruled him out of MVP talks, but once he gets that, I think he'll be thrown in that conversation, and if he doesn't live up to it this year, he'll definitely take a hit.
Well, that's kind of like the rule, is everyone says that if you're going to win the championship, you need to have a top five player leading your team. And it's kind of funny because you only are considered a top five player when you are the number one on a championship team. So, yeah, I think if Tatum can make that mark, it'd be awesome for both Celtics faithful. I'm sure he'd be immortalized in Celtics lore, getting Boston a chip, and also just for from a personal legacy stake. It's kind of silly that we have all these hoops and hurdles that are kind of arbitrary, that you got to jump through to reach the top of whatever legacy leaderboard. Does that even matter as much as we say it does? But if he wants to climb that ladder, like it seems like he definitely wants to, then it starts right here.
So moving on from the Celtics here, my next tier, I guess I would say, I think the Celtics, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are the top tier. Tatum obviously taking the brunt of that pressure there. My next tier, and I think I would put Luka ahead of Anthony Edwards here, but I think those are the next tier of players. I wouldn't say that he has to win a championship, but I think you have to at least beat the Clippers and then put on a show in the second round, and that will hold up your narrative. But if we see a collapse from Luka, especially in these playoffs, from a team perspective, he's not as much as the centerpiece as he has been in years past, but I think he's under a lot of pressure now that he has a few more players, Kyrie playing the way he has. I think it's fair to put a little bit more pressure on him. And then as well, Anthony Edwards, a young player, I think everyone's looking to see if you can make a little bit of a run here. I mean, it's maybe not the most ideal team, but at the same time, I think the way he's been playing against, like he said it himself, his favorite player of all time, Kevin Durant, it's a big chance in the first round to really cement himself as a top player in the NBA.
Wow, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Because I feel like that, first of all, I think that Anthony Edwards is really young, so I think that if the Timberwolves are already thrilled with how the playoffs has been. I'm sure they want to go all the way, especially from Mike Conley, telling the team beforehand, I don't got many years left. Like, he's going to drop off the face of the earth or go on a big expedition or something in the coming years. But, yeah, I guess I see what you're saying, though. It's going to be up to Ant Edwards to get the job done. But with Luka, I feel like that the only thing that would really get him heat, I think, is if he puts up an absolute dud in the playoffs. Because we kind of also had the stipulation of, yeah, it's okay you don't have as much playoff success if you're playing unbelievably when you're in the playoffs. And that's exactly what Luka has been doing his entire career. Averages 33 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists in the playoffs. At that point, it's just kind of like what else do you want him to do?
And well, the other part is I think he finally has the teammates around
him
to make the argument that, all right, well, everyone else is doing their role too. Maybe it's the defense and these other elements that you don't bring. Like, the stats show up on the offensive end, but the rest of the team as a whole, he's not a defensive player at all. You make a living by just outscoring the other team, living in crunch time, knowing that you have a guy that can make a three to seal the game at any point. And if he's not able to do that, I do think that the pressure turns up a little bit on him as well. And it's more so like who the eyes are going to be on the most of, like, he's in one of the biggest series of the first round, especially on one of the most competitive teams. I know the Thunder are the top of the West right now, but I don't think there's any pressure on their stars at all.
Yeah, they're just thrilled to be there right now.
It's weirdly an even overperforming of the Kings the year before of, like, anything we get now is fantastic. They have all the picks in the world the next few years. Some people say they're going to get Kevin Durant. Who knows? But I don't see that happening.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
It's kind of interesting, but also no.
Yeah, that's a whole other offseason kind of conversation. But man, that'd be a train wreck for the Suns. Speaking of which, I don't think he's exactly number two, but it just feels relevant to say right now. Bradley Beal, they brought him in to be their go-to guy, and he's been all right in the playoffs, but it just kind of feels like that he kind of considers to be a big three, but to me it kind of feels like a big 2.5. Beal did not have – he had an efficient season, but he just didn't quite give off that superstar feeling. He was pretty – he really struggled on the defensive end all season, and now he's kind of going to be I don't want to say the centerpiece, but definitely maybe the most important piece. You know that KD's going to get his, and Booker, is kind of off and on, but I'd still say he's kind of in that young phase. You definitely could make the argument that he's going to get absolutely clowned on by everybody. He, in fact, already is, but I think Beal, with the fact that he still has like 3 more years on that deal, getting paid $60 million, I think that there might be some panic button pressing if this winds up being a sweep.
especially from the organization themselves. Like, you bring in Kevin Durant, then you decide to take the next step further and bring in another star.
Yeah, this is the most all-in team right here.
And it would be impossible. I see what you're saying of putting a guy from this team in that situation. I mean, Beal's been all right. I think it's kind of a toss-up between him and Booker for the first few games because he hasn't been fantastic. But Booker's also been really, really bad over the first few games.
Yeah,
this series especially.
In game one, Beal was 6 of 10, 15 points. Game two last night, he was 6 of 17 with 14 points. But, yeah, I guess maybe you'd have to probably give Booker the unfortunate edge and over that one.
Especially, he's been there before, I guess. I mean, it was with Chris Paul, a different team. But going to the finals against the Bucks, I think he has more experience. Even though he is still a young player, he's been there before, so then you get more of that pressure of, all right, like, you know what it takes to get there. Why can't you do it again?
Yeah. Yeah, I had Booker later on my list, but, yeah, I think you make a really strong case on that one. Why don't you go ahead here?
I kind of doubled up on the last one, but Joel Embiid might be – I know he got hurt, and I feel bad saying it, but at the same time, like, how many times can you use an injury as an excuse? How many times can you use the rest of your team as an excuse? You're supposed to be a top five. You won the MVP last year. Like, we need to see at least conference championship. That's the biggest thing. It's like, you could win the first round. How about you win a second round series? And it's not even winning the championship with him. It's just making it run.
Yeah, I definitely get that. I mean, I see both sides. Just on one hand, he is hurt, but you could kind of say that about, because I feel like whenever he goes in the playoffs, whether it be, I mean, it is bad luck, you'd have to say. I don't think he's doing anything wrong, per se, medically, that's leading to him getting hurt. Just got some bad luck. And he's had some nice numbers on paper here in the playoffs. Game one, he went 29 points, 8 of 22, though. So he's been very dependent on the free throws, that especially so in game two, where he went 12 of 29 from the field, 2 of 9 from deep, but 34 points. So it's kind of like, I mean, not a bad performance. You could say that the Sixers got robbed. I see you making that face. The NBA admitted it was a bad call. That being said, you still had to allow back-to-back three-pointers for the Knicks to even have a chance.
Before, what was it, like, generously the 30 seconds that ended that game, there was still the other 39 minutes or whatever of gameplay. And you had all that time to win the game before then, make it so they didn't have a chance to leak back into that game, especially like the last 3 minutes of that game. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but defensively, you can't let them get into that situation. It was a close game, but not as embarrassing as the Lakers, which didn't bring up earlier. But I mean, 20 points to losing it on a buzzer beater is way more embarrassing. But for Philly, especially against the team, like, you expect the Nuggets to win against the Lakers. I think a lot of people would pick Philly over New York.
I would.
And I would as well. And that makes it even more embarrassing and more of, especially like, the crunch time is when you win those games and making those mistakes. And obviously the refs didn't do their job perfectly, but there's other things you can do as like a coach and as players, making shots, being in the right positioning, guarding out, getting those rebounds in those situations so it doesn't come down to the ref's decision.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that one. I mean, it's one of those things where it almost feels like it's different if you're the team that storms all the way back and then gets robbed right at the end, compared to if you should have already had the game locked up and then you get it, the team winds up being able to complete, your opponent completes a big comeback on you because of said error. It was just, I saw a video of, like, Nick Nurse, like, he was kind of indecisive on his timeout calling, but it's still, like, Tyrese Maxey got mugged on the ground. I see both sides. Good for Dante DiVincenzo, though. That was – Bucks sure could use him right now.
It looks like we're going to have to wrap this up right now just so we have enough time to move on to our draft conversation.
Can I quick say one bit here?
Yep.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to quick say I had Donovan Mitchell on there because I think that they'll blow it up if they don't get the job done. And I do have Anthony Davis as well because LeBron, he's got that player option. He could opt out and go someplace else this offseason. And Anthony Davis can't. Yeah, he's still on that deal. So although there's definitely worse fates to have than to be stuck in L.A., I think it'd be pretty damning for Anthony Davis if LeBron says, that's it, I'm out, I'm going someplace else.
And I had Davis on my list as well. He was a little bit lower down because I think he will show that, hey, I'm good. It's more so everyone else around me.
He had 2 points in the second half.
But I think his role more is to be like the crux of their defense, be the rim protector, slow the offense down. And then also, if you think about them blowing a lead, like obviously he's, if he's not scoring and then also not doing their job, it's slowing the other team down at all. There's huge issues there.
Well, still, if you're someone who's really great on defense, like we know Davis is, but then he just is a complete no-show on offense, he's a superstar. But if you're like that, then you're just an average. I mean, your entire defensive contribution is kind of replaced by your lack of offensive contribution in that scenario.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Alex. You look very nice today. He did have a great first half. He had like 30 points. Yeah.
But all, so did Dame in the first half
there
of game one, and the second half
is still the second half. Yep.
Any X factors or anything you wanted to bring up in that category?
Oh, I totally forgot. We got two more categories. Yeah. Whoops. Yeah, I was quick to say you need a guy who can take over stretches and still be comfortable coming off the bench. I'm a big fan of Russell Westbrook. I think there'll be a stretch where he drops points in a spurt. I see you raise your eyebrows, but I totally get that, honestly.
I like that. I mean, the biggest for me was Pat Bev and Bobby Portis as a combo.
Oh, yeah.
I think those are the biggest swing, especially for the Bucks. On the road, I think that like they're going to have to come up big defensively for us.
I went with Chris Middleton, Daniel Gafford on the Mavericks. He'll be quietly good with rebounding this series, which he was yesterday, although I think he got hurt, actually. So I take that back.
And finally, any upset?
I think team most likely to come back from said deficit, I got to go with the 76ers. They feel fired up and mad, so who's to say they don't just blow them out in game three and get right back on track?
That was also my choice, but I think the more obvious choice was the Pacers over the Bucks, unfortunately.
Well,
but
it's tied. I don't think it's going to come back. But, yeah. You got a point there.
All right, moving on to our draft. Do you want to go through? I think we'll save the bingo. Maybe we release our official card.
Yeah, we
got.
Yeah, it was worth noting that we. Actually, why don't you describe the concept? Because it's yours. It's a genius idea.
So there's obviously a lot of cliches around the draft. Anyone that watches it knows it kind of feels like a repeat every single year, just different names that they call for each pick and slightly rearranged. But there's always the same few sayings and things brought up around the draft. And we made a bingo card. We made one for the lead up process.
The pre-draft.
And we also have one for draft night as well. So look out for that. Maybe record it and then put it in the end of the episode or on Spotify or whatever.
Well, why don't you just read some of your favorites? Because I don't think we read all of them for the last one before, and we like darn near blacked out the board.
I mean, the first one that I think is the most obvious.
We'll go over all these next week, I feel like.
We had a plan, and we stuck to the plan. It's definitely going to be something that is said after the draft. I think we already talked about this, of like the best player available and the reach pick being compared side to side, or the quarterback that looks sad sitting in the draft room.
That's the good one.
And just shown between every single pick after he supposedly should have gone off the board.
Aaron
obviously
Rodgers.
Not going to go in the first round anymore, and they keep showing him up on camera. The team makes a surprising pick that goes against most teams' expectations, and two or more announcers just go, whoa!
Yep, I love that one.
Or make some other ambiguous sound that shows, I'm at a loss for words. I have no idea what to say. Let me just make a noise. Thank you. Maybe give your best attempt in the car, wherever you're at right now. my also personal favorite.
There's no way there's someone out there who's driving right now who just went like, oh, hey.
I think there's at least one.
Okay.
I hope there's at least one.
Yeah, me too.
I think this is a very dumb one, but Caleb Williams has Bears theme nails.
He's known for painting his nails.
I think he's going to have Bears colors on.
And I think he's going to do it as like a middle finger to the haters, because there's been a lot of really
all black and
silly
one
criticism.
Orange middle finger.
Yeah, oh, that would be kind of slick. I know that would definitely receive some attention as well. But yeah, the criticism of Caleb Williams, it's just some of the stuff is just so stupid. I think that this would be, you might be onto something here, Alex. And if so, this would be maybe one of the better predictions you've ever had.
I also, so we couldn't believe he's still available. This is actually the only other serious one I wanted to list of a GM or someone talking about their team after the draft of
press conference.
Oh my, yeah, I couldn't believe he was still available when he fell to us. And then, I mean, I have to throw this in there. made-up metaphor doesn't land, a.k.a. the guy that you'd let date your sister line or something along those lines. I'm going to
Someone's going to say something silly on the draft
Yes,
process.
Exactly. Broadening it even more of the same way I made that horrible joke last time. Someone's going to do something similar.
Alex, on our pre-draft bingo card, I think one of the only things that stopped us from getting a complete blackout is him saying that a scout is going to say that he'd let a player date his sister.
It's more of supposed to be like a supporting of the guy's character. And he's like, it was... a total mix-up of the TikTok trend of what like locker rooms going around, like what teammate would you most like or least like to date your sister?
That's older than that. But yeah, I know what you're saying with the Vikings.
Yeah, and other locker rooms have done it since then as well. And
oh, I didn't know that.
I had that stuck in my head. I think the Bills did it as well. With ironically, that one as well.
I love that video where it's like, who wouldn't you let date your sister? What kind of question is that? Oh, Stephon Diggs. I'll have to rewatch that video. But run out of time, so we jump to our mock here?
Yep, quickly.
Just 10 picks.
Do you want to read through yours quickly?
Why don't we do it one by one here?
All right. Obvious one, Caleb Williams.
Yep, same.
Two, Jaden Daniels. Three, I had Drake May.
I also had Drake May.
I could see this being a trade or some move.
Me
but
too.
Cardinals, Marvin Harrison.
Me too.
Probably
so
not
first
a surprise.
Same. Yep.
Chargers, I don't have them trading, which I think will be a shock to most people. I have them taking wide receiver Malik Nabers. They don't have anyone else.
Yeah, I have the Vikings trading up. I think that them getting that first-round pick from the Texans signals they want to trade up, but I think you might be onto something here.
I think it costs too much, though.
And also, I don't think, because they could just trade up for like the Giants pick or the Titans after that, because I don't think the Giants would go quarterback, although maybe I'll be wrong.
So, that's where I think this might end up being the trade, and it depends. I have the team being the Giants taking him, but I don't think they would be the one to do it. I think at the sixth spot is where the Vikings would trade up and take J.J. McCarthy.
Okay. I have the Giants taking Malik Nabers. But,
Titans staying at their spot. The offensive lineman, Joe Alt.
I have that, too.
All right, whatever.
We have the same 10.
Atlanta, I had Dallas Turner. I feel like everyone said that for months now. I don't know.
Really, I
haven't heard anything else.
With J.C. Latham, the offensive lineman. Oh. But, I could totally see that.
Now, nines, I have, is it Rome Odunze?
Odunze.
Yeah. And then Jets taking offensive lineman, got to protect Aaron Rodgers, J.C. Latham.
Yeah, I don't think the Bears will take a receiver, although I wouldn't be entirely surprised. I went with Leitu Latu. I think that's how you pronounce his name, offensive lineman. And then Jets, I have Romo Odunze. So do you want to make this a competition? Who gets the most right?
I think so.
Yeah,
might
sounds
well.
Good. I mean, a lot of these are a wash because we picked the same ones.
Yeah.
But, I'm excited for this draft because we poke fun at the draft process a lot, like a lot. But we also love it. So
how many players did we have different inside the top 10? Was it just
we had the
one
Chargers and Giants?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you mean players outside?
Just the individual players.
Yeah,
inside
I think
the top
just
10.
Two. But
yeah. I mean, so how many offensive players do you expect these top 10 picks to be, specifically quarterback or wide receiver?
Oh, so well that'd be 4, 5, 6, 7. So 7 out of 10 QB and wide receiver between the four quote unquote big quarterbacks and then three very talented wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean it. Unsurprising the way the league's kind of trended over the last few years of going towards those positions being some of the most highest paid positions and frequently given early contracts in the league. And then, I mean, in the draft, it's rare that you see both of them line up for leading into the season where there's plenty more quarterback talent throughout the draft, but the wide receivers as well of just three absolute gems seemingly at the top.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this, not just the draft, but the regular season. I love seeing the rookie quarterbacks play and immediately get compared to each other. And who knows, maybe a team will draft J.J. McCarthy way too early, and as far as we view. I just know that our friend David Giardo is terrified that his Patriots will take J.J. McCarthy with the third pick. And I really want them to do it because he'll be watching the draft from WSUM tomorrow, so I need to see his live reaction.
Since you have absolutely no time to explain yourself, who's going to be the most successful quarterback from this draft?
Caleb Williams.
All right, wow.
Who you got?
Bold choice.
No, it's not.
Ironically, I think it might be like Michael Penix. I think whoever he
draft
falls
in the right
to,
spot. Who knows?
It's situational. Choice there. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was After Further Review on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison Student Radio.